Straight from Boston, it's Founder Thought, the show that has everything from advice, ideas, and inspiration from founders and business owners that made it all happen.
On this episode, we speak with Will Nitza of IQ Bar, a nutrition company selling plant protein bars and hydration mixes, all keto, vegan, clean label, and designed to boost your brain and body's performance.
So welcome to Founder Thought. So today we're here with Will from IQ Bar. So Will, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself in a sentence or two.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Will Nitza. I'm the founder and CEO at IQ Bar. Mm-hmm. We're a nutrition company based in South Boston, Mass. I live there with my wife, and yeah, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So tell us a little bit about you. Let's start off with your background. So where did you grow up? Are you from the Boston area?
I'm not. I've been here for a while. I grew up in northern New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then I went to high school in Western Massachusetts. And then between high school and college, I took a year off and I lived in Cape Town, South Africa.
Oh, wow.
In 2010. And then I went to Harvard undergrad and I've been here ever since. So I graduated 2014 and I've been here ever since.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So what did you study when you were in school?
So I really didn't know what I wanted to do or what I wanted to study. I took government, which is the major at Harvard that is kind of the major where if you don't know what you want to do, you take that because you can take a zillion different courses and different disciplines. But then I also started studying psychology and neuroscience, got a minor in that, and became just totally fascinated with that. So I took as many psych and neuroscience courses as I could. And that was my true passion as an undergrad.
Mm-hmm. What was it about that like drew you in?
There's a guy named Dan Gilbert, who's a now fairly famous psychologist. Mm-hmm. And he had an intro course called SLS 20, Science of Living Systems 20, which is the intro psych course. And he's just so charismatic that he just made me fall in love with the topic. And that was on the psychology side. And then I got fascinated with the physiological side. Mm-hmm. You know, literally, how does the brain work? What are the components of the brain? How does the brain break down, et cetera, et cetera? So I don't know. I just found it inherently really interesting why people do the things they do.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So you graduated in 2014, yes?
Yep.
And so what happened after graduating? Because I think IQ been open for probably 4 years now, by now. So between 2014, 2018.
So I didn't want to, most of my friends were going into finance, consulting, things like that. Some went into tech. Sure. I didn't really want to, I wasn't being drawn to any of those. And so I took a job in software sort of as a default at a startup in the Leather District in Boston. Selling and marketing super esoteric arcane software, operations and supply chain software to oil and gas and utility companies. Mostly because I didn't know what I wanted to do and I thought I'd try my hand at that. And about a year in, I realized, okay, this is not my passion. Software is not my passion. Oil and gas and energy is not my passion. And I became obsessed with nutrition just sort of coincidentally. I felt bad physically. And I realized that my bad diet was a cause of that. And then also concurrently, Whole30 and Paleo and all these whole food based diets were exploding in popularity.
Sure.
And so I read a book called Grain Brain. That was really what did it for me, which was basically, centered on the intersection of nutrition and brain function and brain health. And that was my aha moment. That was what got me fascinated with.
When you say aha moment to start a business? To start your own product. So aha moment? Because like a lot of people have ideas. So did you start, oh, you know what? I could take something, turn this for something. Or you start just thinking about yourself.
Yeah. So aha moment just in the sense of I became like obsessed with this concept of the mind-gut connection. And shortly thereafter, the more business aha moment came of, well, okay, why doesn't brain food exist? You know, if what we put in our bodies, nutritionally speaking, has such an impact in the short and long term on cognition, why is there not a product set around that? And obviously, there are things you can eat, like you can eat salmon, and that's good for your brain because it's high in omega-3s and yada, yada, but that's not a packaged food. I can't go to a 7-Eleven and grab salmon, right?
That would be disgusting.
Yeah, or maybe you can. I don't know.
They have it.
You probably can. Like,
they have it. Disgusting, but they have it.
That does not sound enticing.
They probably do have salmon jerky or something like that. But yeah, that so then, you know, that interest segued into an aha business moment. And I thought, okay, you know, brain food, packaged brain food doesn't exist. I could make this. I could wrap my head around it. I felt I could teach myself the technical know-how. And yeah, so that set off a year period where I was at nights and on weekends. I would go to work from 8 to 6 p.m. and then 6 p.m. to midnight. And then all day Saturday, all day Sunday, I would work on this concept.
So now, before you start, before you start the business of you want to do this business, have you ever drawn to be an entrepreneur? Because I feel being people an entrepreneur, founder, or business owner, this is really a small percentage of people want to do it. Because not everybody, because a lot of people, they want the lifestyle, but not everybody willing to do the work of the lifestyle. So when? It was before or when, you know?
Yeah, and the lifestyle is terrible, to be clear.
Yeah, it is.
Really anyone who's doing it for the lifestyle is sorely mistaken. But but yeah, I always wanted to do my own thing. I always wanted to, in it just in an abstract sense, create something from nothing. Like, okay. I always thought this concept of what if I created something out of thin air that people loved, sure. and that was always attractive to me. Having bosses right out of school, I also realized, well, what if I didn't have a boss? You know, what if I was my own boss? How would that be worse? How would that be better? And it was very clear very early on it would be much more work and harder and longer hours, but better in the sense that I controlled my own destiny.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I was accountable to myself, which I'm just inherently fairly good at being. So I don't know. I wasn't like the kid that had a lemonade stand and I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur, but I had... You know, early on in my career, I started developing this sense that I wanted to be my own boss and I wanted to create something from nothing.
Okay, so now... I have
a question about that really quick, because I think that's interesting, actually. So it's not something that everybody really understands that they can do, but what inside made you say, okay, I know that I have enough discipline or I have enough whatever it is to be able to do this path? Like, what was it that you, knew inside?
I'll give maybe an unconventional answer. I think you have to have a little bit of a blend of arrogance, self-confidence, because starting a company is not rational, right? Mm-hmm. The numbers are all stacked against you.
Yeah, it's totally upside down for so long.
So you have to think okay, all these numbers say that it's a bad idea, but I'm so great that I'm going to make it work. I'm going to defy the odds. So you have to be a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
A little bit arrogant. You have to be incredibly self-confident. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily that I know these 10 things, but more so I can learn any 10 things. Mm-hmm. No matter what the 10 things are, I can learn. I'm confident in my ability to learn, not in my knowledge today.
Yeah.
Which helps. I think if there was one characteristic of a good entrepreneur, it would be that, because those 10 things shift. Like every 6 months, it's a new 10 things.
It's something else, yeah.
And you're always going to be behind the eight ball. But if you're actually comfortable being behind the eight ball, I guess comfortability with uncertainty and ambiguity would be a succinct way of saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with you, because I think every entrepreneur, you have to be very self-confident. You have to be cocky, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And you have to be a risk taker. Yeah, that's one of my
obviously, you have to respect people. You have to show all the respect in the world. But I think you have to be able to be you have to think too highly of yourself.
Yeah.
As simple as can be. Oh, my God, I'm the smartest guy in the world. And I think I'm the smartest guy in the room. But this was you have to think about yourself like this. And you have to be able to learn. I think really massive thing. Are you able to change your skin? Are you able to learn? Are you able to roll with the bunches? Because I think a lot of people, they come and want to start the business. They have amazing ideas. But really, they're not willing to have those discipline, or they don't have I'm reading a book actually about confidence. Number one, actually, from why business owners successful or not, confident. Confidence is a huge issue in the process, because a lot of people have smart ideas, but they don't have the confidence to take the action. They don't have the confidence to say, you know what, I can learn this. Because if you open a business and you think everything is going to be rosy, obviously mistaken. Nothing is going to be rosy. All the challenges are going to come. It's going to have amazing days, but not everything is going to be rosy. So now, when we start, you start after 1 year, you start working at night, day, you're working at night time. What you were working at night time to develop the product, cook it at home, what, like, what are you developing?
Like, how did everything start?
Yeah, sure. So this is another principle that I believe in, which is if you don't know how to do something, what do you like, if you just pose a question to a bunch of people who want to be an entrepreneur, you say, okay, you don't know how to start or where to start, 99% will not be able to answer that question. My answer to that question is you call 10 people who already did it, for better or worse. I do think that's the best strategy. So effectively what I said was, okay, I need to make this bar. I decided on a bar as a form factor because huge market. I need to mash together a bunch of nutrients. What form factor does that map to? Well, it maps to a bar. Okay. Who has started a bar company before? And do I live near someone who started a bar company? And as it turns out, there were a couple bar companies in Boston. So I said, okay, great. I'll call the people who started that. And I did that. And then I called people who started other food and bev companies. Basically, anyone in consumer packaged goods that started a company, I called them.
And they were willing to, like, help you out and to give you advice? Or were they just, like, they didn't have time? How was the reception?
Really collegial. I think this varies by industry, but the food and bev world is very collegial. It's people are willing to help. And I think it's the pay it forward principle. Someone helped them, and they're just, I don't know why, they're just friendly. It's such a grind to succeed that I think there's just a lot of empathy for whatever reason. So I bought all of them a coffee and I sat down and I asked them 100 questions and then I triangulated what I thought the right answer was, because I asked the same questions to 10 people and I got actually remarkably different answers. But so then I took the results from that exercise and developed a roadmap, because they all told me how they started. Well, you find a manufacturer and then you, here's how you set up your supply chain. Here's what your gross margin should be. Here's how you get into your first retail locations, yada, yada, yada. And so I developed a roadmap and then just started executing on step one, then two, then three, then four. And I was doing it all myself. So website, marketing, how am I going to finance this? How am I going to find a manufacturer? How do I create the product? I created the product myself. So I would call big food ingredient companies. I would pretend to be like a company. I wasn't really a company at all. I was a guy in my apartment in Boston, And I would say, well, I'm this company and I'm interested in XYZ ingredient, and can I get a sample? So they would send samples, and then I would literally make the prototypes myself and taught myself food science and all that. And so, yeah, the year period was a combo of actually making prototypes and just further figuring out what my roadmap
was. And how long did it take you to develop the product? Like, because this is not easy first, obviously. It's not easy.
Yeah. I mean, it took the full year. I started out in an overambitious way. I was like, okay, this is going to be the best thing since sliced bread. It's going to have curcumin, which is the active compound in turmeric, and it's going to have resveratrol, which is what's in grapes, that is why people say drinking wine is good for you in moderation, and it's going to have yada yada yada. And I would actually like make prototype bars with these things, and then they were like orange, and then stain your hands orange, and I was like, okay, that's never going to work. Or the resveratrol would add, you know, 10 cents of cost of goods per bar, and there's no way that's ever going to work. And yeah, you basically start crossing things off your list. It's an exercise of attrition. So just start with, and this is all living in spreadsheets. So I'm like, okay, these are all the nutrients I want. Here's the whole food ingredients that are richest in them. Like, what if I just mashed this combination or that combination? And you just start crossing things off of, that's going to make it too expensive, that tastes terrible, that makes it orange, no one wants that, that's an unrelatable ingredient, it'll never mass marketize properly. And then you get, you know, you whittle it down to a point where it's relatively cost effective with a path to being more cost effective. It tastes good. It's looks. Food's a weird industry where it has to look a certain way. It has to taste a certain way. It has to last a year on a shelf. I mean, that's crazy. And then, got to a point, not even where it was perfect, just where I thought, okay, I could test the market with this.
Mm-hmm. And how did you do that?
Yeah. So, and I think people have a conception of food and bev companies where it's like, oh, I baked this in my kitchen and then I sold it to my neighbor and then I sold it to my neighbor's neighbor. And then I got it in the bodega down the street. And that is a way to do it. Mm-hmm. I was never interested in that. I wanted to scale incredibly fast and learn incredibly quickly whether this idea had legs. Mm-hmm. I also didn't have money to do that. So I thought, okay. And then you get into the valuation and finance dynamic. So, when you make physical products, you need money to, to pay the manufacturer to create it. And then, you sell it, you get money back and there's your cash flow cycle, but you need that startup money. Problem is, if you go out and raise the money just on an idea, you're never going to get a valuation that you want. So you're going to have to sell a big chunk of your company at the worst time, in the most dilutive way possible, and you're just going to regret it. So I was like, okay, how do I solve that chicken or egg problem? Mm-hmm. And Kickstarter was a good way to solve that problem. So effectively it solved that issue. You could pre-sell, thousands of units, get the money, use that money to pay the manufacturer, they manufacture it, and then you have sales. So you can go to investors and say, well, hey, before we were talking, I just had a PowerPoint deck. Well, now I actually have X amount of sales. So now I'm worth Y. Mm-hmm. And I actually have data to back that up. And true to form, that worked. So that was the order of operations.
And what were your goals back then? Were you looking to just, I know you said you want to scale it quickly to make sure that the product, like proof of concept, but what were your goals at that point? Were you looking to just like, let's just see where this thing leads? Or did you have like real strict specific direction of what you were trying to do and where you were going with it?
Yeah, I did. So launching a food product on Kickstarter is really tough. Mm-hmm. It's not really, it doesn't map well to the demographic that backs projects.
Do you mind if I ask how many items you sold in Kickstarter?
I don't know the exact number of items. We sold, I think it was like 2,100, it was over 2,000 orders.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And we sold between Kickstarter and Indiegogo. So you can end your Kickstarter project and then there's spillover that Indiegogo backers that Indiegogo will catch up. Between those two, we sold $90,000 worth of product, like right out the gate, nice. Month one. So, obviously that, but to answer your question about the goals, we thought, okay, it's really hard to be successful with a food product on Kickstarter. Really successful brands who have done it have hit like 50K.
Yeah.
Like we'll aim for 50K. And then we ended up doing 70K. It's sort of arbitrary, like 40, 50, 70, like who cares? The point was it was successful and it proved that at least 2,000 people want this product in the world. So, yeah.
So you did the Kickstarter, so you have a proof of concept. What happened after?
Yeah, so I mean, and that is an awkward phase, by the way, right after a Kickstarter. It's like, okay, 2,000 people want it, but is that a business? It's kind of, there are a lot of question marks that exist still. So, and I'm effectively a one-man show. Sure. I had a one-and-a-half-man show. One guy was helping me part-time, but we segued the Kickstarter campaign into a website. So we got a website up. Looked terrible in retrospect, but it was functional.
Sure.
And then some percentage of those Kickstarter people rebought on the website.
Amazing.
And then also concurrently, I raised money. So I raised a little over $600,000. Mm-hmm. And so now I had money and I could hire a guy. A major pain point for me was I was managing all the sales and marketing and manufacturing,
sure.
mm-hmm. which is like just nuts. It's not sustainable. So I was like, okay, I have to offload supply chain and operations. And so I made my first hire and then, my capacity doubled. Now I could focus on sales and marketing. And then, we created a social media presence, started investing in advertising. We created a Amazon shop on the back of the website. And that was what really started kicking things off for us because, you know, in retrospect, it was a great time to start a keto compliant bar company on Amazon for whatever reason. This was in mid to late 2018. And we just started doing like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a month without really trying on Amazon.
That's amazing.
It's opened my mind to like, oh, like this platform is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what niche you're in, there's a lot of people looking for the thing you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten since, you know, then more competitive. It was competitive even when we started, but that was where I was like, okay, this is a business, you know, like this is now we're doing $100,000 last month. Like this is going to work.
And so in this time you already developed the company. Did you came up with the name?
Yeah. Yeah.
The name, how we came up with the name also.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole, people will theorize about trademarks, sure. You know, all day long, but, so we called it IQ Bar because the thought was, okay, a lot of people squander a trademark. I think a trademark is an opportunity in a very succinct way to tell people who you are and why mm-hmm. you're special mm-hmm. / what your value proposition is without pigeon. The key caveat there is without pigeonholing yourself in only one direction. And so I was like, okay, it's good. I want this thing to be good for your brain. So do I call it Brain Bar or like brain mm-hmm. food or this or that? And then I was like, well, that's kind of gross. Like now you're thinking about a brain while you're eating. Like what's a more ethereal concept of thought, intelligence, like IQ. Okay. And it's, everyone knows what it is. It's, mm-hmm. it's globally recognized, right? Mm-hmm. It's a global way of measuring intelligence. Okay, I'll do IQ bar. And like bar is a bar. That's obvious. So in 2 seconds, someone can understand, here's who you are, here's what you sell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flip side of that, of course, is, well, okay, you're IQ bar. What if you want to do things that aren't bars?
Sure.
We're in the second stage of our life cycle where we're platformizing ourselves to be IQ Co. And then under IQ Co. will be IQ bar, IQ mix, IQ this, IQ that. But anyway, how'd I think of it? I think I just sat there and thought on my couch alone and was on like thesaurus.com for 10 hours. And that was the shortest. And I could trademark it. Of course, that's incredibly important too. Mm. Can you get a trademark for this? Mm. So I had to talk to a trademark lawyer and it looked good. So I went for it.
Okay. So now when you start this, obviously start Kickstarter, you start seeing success, then you start moving for Amazon. Now, what challenge are you facing this time? I'm sure a lot of stuff comes from financial challenge, the higher challenge. What challenge do you face? And what do you think the number one challenge was for you?
Like right after the Kickstarter phase?
Yes.
Oh, man. I mean, there's so many. I think hiring is incredibly tough at that phase. You don't have a lot of money, right? So how do you convince really good talent to work with you? Sure. First of all, your business very likely won't succeed. It's incredibly risky for the person. And I think that's attractive for a lot of people if it's a tech company, let's say, and well, it could be the next, whatever, Snapchat, multi-billion dollar company. So I don't care that it's risky and there's only a couple people. But with a nutrition bar company, it's kind of like, am I going to be the first employee at a kind of a random food company? Sure. It's a weird proposition for a smart, accomplished, hardworking person. Like, why would they do that? So, and also you're going to get paid below market, right? You just are. So hiring's tough at the earliest stages. Of course, there you get to a tipping point where it's like, oh, this is working. We're growing 100% a year. Like this is a valuable company now. And You cross that threshold and hiring gets way easier. But at the early days, it's insanely tough.
How many people know in the company?
Right now?
Yeah.
So we have 9 people.
Well, 9 people. Yeah. Wow.
Three folks in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who work at our warehouse, and then six, like, all, quote unquote, office employees.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And actually, I have a question regarding fundraising. Fundraising was hard because a lot of people, the challenge was fundraising.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't.
It
wasn't hard. I've thought about this a lot, like, why wasn't it hard? And I hate when people are disingenuous over this kind of a topic.
Sure.
Like, I think the fact that I went to Harvard probably helped. It's just like, is what it is. It added some legitimacy. Whether or not it was warranted, I think that helped. I think the fact that we got traction with the Kickstarter helped a lot.
Yes.
Mm. I mean, that helps more than anything, right? Yeah. Sales.
Like proof of concept. People want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it definitely will make a difference.
Sales cures everything, right? Sure. Like, so that was massively helpful. But none of our big or none of our early fundraisers were people I knew. They weren't family members. They weren't friends of the family. Like, they were this one guy, Court, who now sits on our board of directors. I was friends with this other entrepreneur, and I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about making a blueberry flavored bar. And he's like, oh, do you want me to connect you with the king of blueberries? I was like, what does that mean? And he's like, yeah, this guy Court, I went to high school with him, and now he runs the biggest blueberry genetics company in world. I was okay, yeah, like, give me Court's number. So I got on with Court, and Court is a super inquisitive, interesting guy. And he's like, wow, this is really interesting what you're doing here. Would you ever consider taking on investors?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, I would consider that. Anyway, that one thing led to another. And then, you know, he wrote a $10,000 check, and then did our Kickstarter. A couple months later, he wrote a $200,000 check.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, I didn't even know this guy like six months ago.
Yeah.
So that dispels, I think, this concept of like, you need to have a rich uncle, or you need to, like, I didn't know who this guy was, and now this guy just gave me 200 grand, right? And then he brought his friend in, who also wrote a $200,000 check.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. And now we have 400,000. Then getting the other 200K we wanted was like incredibly easy. Once you get 2/3 of what you're trying to raise, the final third is incredibly easy. It just is the way fundraising works. So yeah, I won't lie. It actually wasn't that hard, but I think it wasn't that hard because we busted our ass on the Kickstarter and got sales.
I think you have a product also. Like, you have an product, actual product sales, because a lot of people, they want fundraising only ideas. They don't have a proof of concept. They have nothing, and they try to fundraise it. So now, how long have you been doing this, Will? Like 4 years now?
Yeah, so we fulfilled our first order in mid-2018.
So it's been four years. So what do you learn about yourself so far?
Sorry?
What do you learn about yourself?
What I learned about myself? I learned that I can withstand a massive amount of pressure. You don't know that until you put it on your own shoulders. Like, everyone has a breaking point. I have not reached my breaking point yet. Good. And I've dealt with a lot. So I've learned that I can rapidly learn. Like, to what I was saying earlier, you know, I was confident I could already, but I mean, I had to effectively teach myself food science, e-commerce. How does the e-commerce business run? Hiring, HR, legal, accounting. Mm-hmm. You have to become a pseudo expert in like eight different fields. Sure. I mean, an entrepreneur's skill set doesn't map well to any profession. You're not good at, you're not world class at anything. You're quite good at 20 things.
Yeah.
And so I learned I could get quite good at 20 things. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. Is just like, can I rapidly learn 10 new skills in 3 months? And I learned the answer is yes.
So now, is this a big market? I think this is a competitive market, or is not?
So the bar market is huge, which is our first beachhead market, and obviously the name of the brand. So the bar market is, I think it's like a $4 billion market in the U.S.
Sure.
Wow.
So just massive category. And you go to a grocery store and there's an entire aisle dedicated to it.
Now there is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. And by the way, that wasn't always the case. Yeah. So like, you know, Gary Erickson started Clif Bar. Actually, before Clif Bar was Power Bar was really the first one. And then Gary Erickson hated it and started Clif Bar. And he really blew the category out. And then a zillion copycats came after him. But so, yeah, it's a huge market. And then even like the sub niches within the market are huge. So or huge is relative, but large, like tens, hundreds of millions of dollar markets. So just take like keto bars, for instance. One diet in that form factor. You know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars of a market. Plant-based protein bars versus whey protein bars. Like each of these sub-categories are huge in and of themselves. So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing I would tell any entrepreneur is, well, this is my personal preference. I prefer to go into big markets where there's a lot of demand and a lot of competition.
Why is that? What do you think? You just know there's an opportunity there, or why would you?
I think the worst thing that can happen to an entrepreneur is trying to manufacture demand where it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like I'd much rather steal market share than try and just invent demand out of thin air. Like that sucks because you put in all this work and then it's like, oh wait, no one ever wanted this thing. It happens to technology companies all the time. They build all these features when they didn't even ask the end user if they wanted them, you know? So I'd much rather go after a big market, like a bar market, and then just try and out-operate, out-compete, create a novel, unique selling proposition product. And I'll take that any day.
So what's unique?
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your product?
Yeah, sure. So, and we have two products. So we started as a bar company. So IQ Bar is the eponymous hero product line. And it's a plant-based protein bar. It's keto compliant. It's clean label. We don't use, you know, we don't use sugar alcohols. We don't use any wacky ingredients. And basically the original point of the bar was it centers on all these things that are good for your brain. So we looked at what are all the nutrients that have been shown to be good for a brain. So vitamin E, flavonoids, omega-3s, et cetera, et cetera. And then what whole food ingredients are richest in those. So for vitamin E, it could be almonds. Omega-3s, it could be chia seeds or flax seeds, et cetera. And then we're going to make a bar out of that. So we're going to make a brain healthy bar. We're not going to be in the nutraceutical or the medicinal world. We're not going to make hard claims that if you eat this, that will happen. But it'll be a brain healthier bar than, you know, the Clif Bar sitting next to it. And also we're, you know, then this part is critical. We're going to thread the needle across like every major diet. And those diets, by the way, have to be good for your brain. So keto, paleo, vegan, the ketogenic diet was originally created to, as a treatment for epilepsy. So, but is just good for your brain for a variety of reasons. So you ask people why they buy our bars. A lot of time they'll say, well, I'm low carb or I'm keto or I'm trying to cut way down on sugar. They don't even mention the brain element. So we can hook in consumers through, you know, diet over here and then brain health piece over here. And I just want a chocolate bar that costs less than $2.50 over here. And so we try and garner demand through, you know, three, four or five different ways. And then IQ Mix is the first installation of this concept of platformizing ourselves. So we're not just a bar company, we're a brain and body nutrition company. And we're going to create other form factor products for different occasions throughout the day. So you want a snack at noon, but then you want to work out and you need to hydrate. Well, that's also relevant to your brain. And so we're going to make a product that fits in there and it's going to be coherent, make sense and hit on all the same dietary trends as the bars.
So now you have two products, yes?
Yeah.
The bar and this product. This is used with why? But it was why I won't mix it and you drink it before workout, before or anytime.
Yeah, I mean, you can drink it anytime. So this form factor, a stick pack powder, right? You know, when you grow up, you have a Gatorade or Propel or whatever. And then I think Crystal Light was really the first one to have a powdered stick pack where you rip the top, pour it in, shake it, drink it. But then Liquid IV, if you're familiar with them, became massive in the in that hydration space for that form factor and made it clear that you can create a big company or at least a big product line with that form factor. And their whole thing is just everyday hydration. You don't have to be lifting weights. You don't have to be going for a hike. You could just be sitting at your desk. You still need to hydrate. You still should hydrate. So we're a similar vibe, just in a different, you know, similar occasion, different value proposition. So we have zero sugar in the products. So again, similar to bars, very low, which are very low sugar, low carb. And then similar deal too, we optimize it around certain brain nutrients. So
who's your target audience? So, because when you talk about like your son, you had to learn marketing, you had to learn finance, how you develop your persona and how you develop who's your target audience, who's going to buy your product?
So it's interesting because we didn't start, like I said, there was no data on brain food. So we didn't start where we're like, okay, we're going to sell it to this type of person. It's going to be a men 20 to 25 who are semi-affluent. Like that exercise never occurred, for better or worse. We just created the product that we wanted and got a bunch of demand in, customers in, and then just looked at who they were, like analyzed, like, who are all of you? And, you know, women buy 70% of groceries in America. Right. So, and then even within bars, it's slightly female, heavy in terms of purchasing data. And then within our product, we learned, okay, it's slight majority female, diet conscious, semi-affluent to affluent, cares about nutrition, health and wellness, et cetera, et cetera. Like we have all these stats. Most are actually, a majority are married, interestingly. And so we took that and we said, okay, what else? You know, we had called a year of data. We learned that, okay, what else do these people buy? Well, they buy hydration products like Noon and Liquid IV and this and that. And so basically we then, for subsequent product lines for this and what we'll do for other lines is we'll create for that same consumer. But we didn't set out being like, okay, we're going to sell it to women 28 to 55, you know, yada, yada.
Okay.
So it just kind of happened.
Now you have the product, you have your Kickstarter, you did fundraising. What steps you take after? So you have the product, you launch, you said you develop your website, then you launch Amazon, you start doing advertising. All this you did by yourself, or you hire people to do this for you?
So I did it by myself plus third parties. So I hired an Amazon management agency and they manage our listings and our bid on search terms and they manage Amazon. And then I hired someone to do social media because I was like, I can't post every day or twice a day. Like that's just, I can't do it.
Yeah. And if you don't mind, before we jump, what else you did? How you choose right social media? Oh, you guys, you just put in every social media.
Oh, like what channels?
Yeah, what channels?
I mean, Instagram was effectively, we were like, okay, you know, there's Facebook, there's Instagram, there's this, there's that. Like, let's pick one and just focus on it. And it was basically Instagram, which is kind of what everyone did and does with food and beverage products. It's more of a visual field. Like everyone takes a picture of their avocado toast or whatever. And that this was when like food influencers were becoming a thing. Like it was a big group of people.
And you probably backed into that, not realizing that that's exactly your target audience too. That's like majority women, like in those age ranges that are using the platform. So it probably just, it all like worked out. Precisely how you didn't plan.
And I don't think Instagram, by the way, like drove a ton of sales for us. I think we got up a brand out of legitimacy. We created a presence, you know, we do giveaways but that was never like says, whoa, Instagram is like driving this business. That's not the case. I then hired my now wife, which was an interesting one. So, but she's an absolute rock star. She runs her entire e-commerce business, which is like a $9 million business this year. And that was basically, we had gotten the business to a place where we knew it was going to work. It's doing well. It was growing rapidly. I forget how it happened. I think she was just like, hey, what if I, you know, took over your marketing? I was like, great. I don't have to hire someone. Like one less hire. I know you're smart. She worked at an ad agency. I know you can figure out Amazon. I know you can figure out their website. Like, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
And that was like the best decision I ever made. I think in some cases that will be the worst decision someone makes.
Yeah.
For me, that was the best decision I ever made.
What's your dynamic? Do you guys work together a lot or what's the dynamic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we live together. We wake up, make coffee next to each other. She goes into one room. I go to in another room. It's funny, actually, because we'll be on Zoom calls and we'll have different backgrounds.
Yeah.
And then, like, something will happen. Like, my internet will go out, but hers won't. And so I'll just like walk over to her room and people didn't know we were married, let alone in the same spot. And I was, and then you have to break it to them. And like, yeah, we're married.
So this is actually because we are married also. We've been married for like 19 years. We're going on 20 years and we work together and we all business together. So what challenges comes with, because we can say it's obviously amazing. It's fun, but also challenges comes there. What challenge? Because what's the dynamic? You know, because you want to try to separate the personal between business.
Yeah.
Like, how do you balance that?
How you balance
we don't.
Yeah.
Don't.
No, we don't.
There's no balance
either.
It's just work.
We don't either. So I started the business when I was 26. I was a young guy. She's 1 year younger than me. We're still young. I'm 31 now. I honestly don't think it's a sustainable set. Like, we both agree, this is not sustainable. We can't do this forever. Like, we work 12 hours a day, every day, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And we have for years. Like, that's not sustainable. But it is for whatever reason. Well, not for whatever reason. We're young. We don't have kids. Like, we've cut off. You know, I barely see my friends. She barely sees her friends. Like, you just agree. Yeah. We're going to make XYZ sacrifice for X amount of, you know, for Y amount of years. And that just is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm the same way. Like, it's work bleeds into non-work and everything is work related.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the life we chose for ourselves for that period of time. And then that period of time will end. And then we'll be like, let's not do that again. Like, let's do something a little more sustainable.
Yeah. Let's have a life and then we can have business around the life.
Yeah.
As long as it's a challenge, because we open different businesses, we close different businesses. Every idea we finish, we say, what's something new? It's a problem, like, especially when you have ambition people. And like, I think you're going to find out probably it's hard when you have this lifestyle. It's hard to shift to be like, it's really challenge. Because I don't know how people, what they do in their life when they have nothing. You're gonna figure out sometime, because we did have different agents before we closed it. We make a lot of money from, but we continue opening new stuff. We're not coming back and saying, you know what, oh, let's just stop here. I feel it's hard. It's really, for me personally, it's hard. I'm not sure what everybody, but for me, I think you need the challenge because you're
I think a lot of people and a lot of entrepreneurs will realize that there's different challenges that you can totally accept and do. But there's also a point where, like, you need to have a life and you need to spend time with family and friends. And you've got other things that you want to do in life where you're going to be able to. Okay, he'll be working forever. I won't be.
I mean, I will be, too. I will be, too, to be clear. Like, I'm like you. Like, I need to be doing something. I need to have a challenge on a daily basis. And now I think I've like actually changed the muscle memory in my entire body to where I need to wake up and like accomplish some goal that day. like me sitting on the couch that day feels mm-hmm. really weird for me.
Oh my yeah. God, the guilt. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's definitely
I
guilt.
I feel so much guilt when like I don't do anything at home. And just, oh my God, the guilt. Yeah. It's killing me because, oh my God, you feel bad. But actually, to bring us for the goods, because this actually I get subway for. What do you think about setting goals?
What do I think about setting goals?
Yeah, goals. Because I feel this is probably a really important thing.
Well, I think most entrepreneurs have to have a goal. Like, I don't think you can be entrepreneurial and not set goals, maybe. I've never heard of it, but what's your take on it?
I set goals, but I keep them, I circumscribe the scope of the goal. So I don't set goals beyond a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you have this higher level goal of I'm going to sell this one day, sure. but one day it could be in 2 years, 3 years, four, whatever. But actual concrete goals that have a number tied to it, and I look out a year. Mm-hmm. And by the way, anyone who looks further, you can do that. Things will change so much that it'll be irrelevant. So it's like, okay, I think I could set a goal in a year and hit the goal in a year and it will be like roughly what I set. And so that's my like time horizon. And I think setting audacious, like two qualities of a goal that I like to set are just, is it audacious? Is it bold? Is it going to be hard to hit? And is it simple? Rather than saying, okay, we're going to hire this many people and we're going to move into this many channels. Just, we're going to do X amount of revenue. That's our goal. We could get there through some really circuitous path. I mean, we will get there through a circuitous path. Could be, I have no idea how we'll get there, but that's the goal.
Yeah.
And it's big. So it's simple and it's big, and then we'll figure it out along the way.
Let me ask you too, what do you gauge as success? It sounds like probably revenue is one number, but what else are you looking for in this business? Like, why did you start this business? Like, we know why you started it, but tell us about, like, when you reach the point of success, what does that look like to you?
I want to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I want to make something a lot of people like that makes a lot of people's lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to never have a boss again.
So this is the first action time I hear entrepreneurs say, I want to make money. Because everybody tell you, I want to build something. For us, like, for example, for me, I think about I want to make like specific number of revenue, but also I want to build a tool. But really, I think it's because all people in this to make money, sooner or later to make money. Because I don't like when people tell you, I'm not here to make money. I'm just here to make him. Obviously, we want money. I think it's refreshing actually to say I want to make a lot of money, because a lot of people, they don't tell you, I'm here to make an impact in people's life or whatever is that message.
Bullshit.
Because I feel
to make money. You're not working every day and night not make money.
Why I'm not bashful about it. Like, why, to your point, you're working day and night, 6 days a week, you're not going to parties your friends are going to, or this event or that event.
Yeah.
I have no qualms with saying, yeah, the point of that is to make a lot of money. Like, otherwise it's just not rational to like make that many sacrifices.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm going to go sit on a beach. Like, by the way, I'm going to use that money to create something new. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a hedonic sort of a consideration. Yeah. It's like, no. Money is a tool. I want to make a lot of it. Then I'm going to go do these 10 things that are also cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
Give you more flexibility to do other stuff in life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now with your product, I know it's in store or only online?
So our business is, we have a pretty large brick and mortar presence. So we're in about 7,500 stores.
Oh, wow.
So we're in Kroger, Walmart, Sam's Club, Wegmans, Sprouts, Rite Aid, tons of smaller chains. So that's 40% of the business, and then 60% is still online. So the majority is still online.
Oh, wow.
And through the website or Amazon?
Both.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And
usually when companies get into like brick and mortar, that's like their main focus. Like, that's most of their revenue. So it's really interesting to know that it's still a lot of B2C directly that you guys do.
Yeah, it's been the majority since day one of the business. Again, Amazon is a beast. I don't know how else to put it. It's like, if you know how to harness that just sheer amount of demand, I mean, we could very easily only sell on Amazon. If we really wanted to simplify the business,
yeah,
we could still have a large business and only sell on Amazon. So, yeah. I mean, that's what drives volume, really.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a membership for you people? Like, people buy one time or subscription or...
Yeah, we do subscriptions, 15% off on our website. I think it's 5 to 10% on Amazon. Yeah. Subscribe and save. And we price competitively. That's the other thing too, that I think if you make physical stuff, I think the most overlooked thing people think about is pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pricing is a variable that you can legitimately innovate on. And a lot of people will think, oh, I'm going to make this really cool product, and then the product will be great. It'll be really high quality. People will love it. But it'll never mass marketize because it's just has no path to hit a price point on a Walmart shelf. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Mm.
And so if the price point isn't built into the DNA of your product, then you're living on borrowed time from
and
the
let
start.
Me ask you, what? How much your price point for each bar?
Yeah, so it's 208 and a fraction of a penny, I think. So we sell it by 12 packs, $24.99. And then if you buy more, if you buy 24 bars or 36 bars or 72 bars, the price per bar keeps going down.
So that's why I feel a lot of people, when they open a business, they have a time with the price because they don't understand how much they should the price. Do I go higher? Do I go lower? Do I go in the middle where I want to be? I think I like the idea how you said which way, like, for example, you're not going to put $5 in par for Walmart. No, but I don't know if anybody buy it. So I like the idea how you're talking about it. Okay.
I have a question though. So what drives you? Like, so what is, when you get out of bed every morning, like, what makes you
making a lot of money.
Go and work? Just money?
No. That's what.
But there's got to be other stuff. No, there's got to be.
There's what drives you today and then mm-hmm. what drives you
like long
this
term.
Year. And then there's what drives you for 5 years. I think there's different gradations of motivation. So, at the end of the day, you want to have some payout and you want to get X amount of market share. And
mm-hmm.
But, that's not necessarily what gets me up in the morning. I don't know. It's a weird combination of... There's a lot of people relying on me mm-hmm. now, I think is probably what gets me up like this morning.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't get up this morning and kick ass, there's like 10 people who are like, what the hell are we doing here? You know, so, eventually, every once in a while you sit back and you're like, whoa, what am I like doing more broadly here? Like, mm-hmm. why am I, a lot of people will spend 2 years doing something and they're like, whoa, I gotta stop. This is not like... Why I started is not why I'm doing it now. Thought it would be worth it, and now it's not. And mm-hmm. like that's a healthy process. Every 6 months, you should mm-hmm. reevaluate why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah,
is it what you thought it would be 6 months prior, et cetera, et cetera.
That's a great exercise. I don't think we've ever really discussed that, but that is something that I think we do on a regular basis, probably way more often than 6 months, evaluating what are we doing? What are the different like businesses that we're running? You know, where do we want to go with this? Is it worth our time? Shut that down. Let's focus here, whatever that looks like. But I think that's a very healthy process to go through, especially, when you're growing.
A lot of people will just get in a habit. So they're like, they can't answer that. They're like, well, I'm doing this because that's what I did yesterday.
Yeah.
And that can last for a little bit, but that can't last forever.
It can't sustain. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we're going to move on to rapid questions. So I'm just going to ask you a bunch of questions, just the fastest answer you can come up with. They're very easy. It's fun. All right. So on to rapid questions. All right. So tell us one word that describes you.
Passionate.
What's your favorite food?
Pasta, even though I know it's... not good for me.
What's your favorite movie genre?
Anything by Wes Anderson.
I don't even know who that is.
Royal Tenenbaums or Fantastic Mr. Fox is an animated one.
Okay. Yeah. I have no idea. That was a new one for me. If you had to listen to one song for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, God. It would be like that one by... what's the guy's name? Andrea Bocelli. It would have no words because the words would drive me nuts.
Just like music. Yeah, just music. Do you prefer tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Are you more productive day or night?
Night.
What do you miss most about being a kid?
Just running around barefoot in my lawn.
You can totally do that right now. Do you have a favorite book?
How to Get Rich by Felix Dennis.
Great. Name one person who inspires you.
My wife.
And we already asked, what do you think about setting goals? What's your biggest fear?
Letting myself down.
Great.
Why?
Because so much of my ego is tied up in me thinking I can achieve what I want to achieve. And if I didn't, then it'd be like a existential crisis for me.
You're like stabbed to the heart.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're on to complete this sentence. So this is where it gets fun. When I started my business, I wish I knew this.
I wish I knew how expensive it would be.
Leadership for me is about what?
Leading by example.
One thing that makes a great team member?
Loyalty.
Great. Challenges in life or business are what?
What makes life fun?
In 5 years, my business will be what?
Sold.
That's a good one. The best advice I would give someone is?
Be ruthlessly curious.
Great. And if given the opportunity to do differently, I would do what?
Start sooner.
Amazing.
Amazing.
So that's it. So let's do a quick wrap up.
Sure.
So why don't you tell us where, if someone was looking for more information or wanted to contact you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so eatiqbar.com is our website. Mm. IQBar, if you search it on Amazon, you'll find us. At eatiqbar, our social, every social is that. I'm on LinkedIn. My name is Will Nitze, N-I-T-Z-E. I post daily about random musings about starting a company.
Mm. Actually, let me ask you about LinkedIn, because why you decided to do it this way? Why just talk about how you start a business? And
So a lot of people will tell you, well, go on this social media channel because that's where all the people are and that you can go viral and this and that. Like TikTok is like that. It's like, you have to be on TikTok. I would give different advice. I would say, where can you create really excellent content that a lot of people are going to like it? And can you be consistent on? Like, what could you do every single day? For me, I like written word. LinkedIn is conducive to that. So is it like, am I going to go viral as many times on LinkedIn as I would have on TikTok? No, probably not. But I just don't want to do that. And I know I can do this well. And so I actually optimize for what can I do every day sustainably, enjoy it, not burn out. And that's, for me, LinkedIn. I think for other people, it's TikTok. Yeah, I wake up every day and the first half hour, I just think a thought and then write it and then rewrite it.
Amazing. And how many times you post on LinkedIn? One time, two times?
Every day for like, I think I'm like 90 days. Well, I don't do the weekends, but 90 business days straight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. Amazing. So where they can find you besides social?
You can email me if you want. will@eatiqbar.com.
Okay. Will you want to highlight for people we did not mention? Any last advice for any entrepreneur? One advice you would give somebody?
I would say that you're probably mispricing risk and you're probably evaluating risk the wrong way. And that the riskiest thing you could do in your entire life is to be unfulfilled. And so most people's perception of risk is just flat out wrong. And so that you should just take more quote unquote risks, or what society deems to be risks, because they're not actually what's risky. Being unfulfilled is what's risky.
Wow.
Amazing.
Amazing.
So thank you so much for joining us. This was a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Thank you, Will.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to Founder Thought. You can find more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or on the web at founderthought.com. Founder Thought is a production of Pepper Gang.